Ready? When you're experiencing an ananda vritti from a loved one, your partner, child, animal, that illusion of ananda can be so overwhelming and convincing that it is difficult to see that the source is inside me. As a jnani, how do I sit with that fact? And at the same time, let my little one feel loved and fulfilled. It seems like it's mainly the little one having the projection of love onto the object outside of me. Well, you know, one thing I think is important. Let me try to get myself settled here. Okay. There's nothing wrong with having a sukha-vritti or having an ananda-vritti or feeling tremendous love for your partner, for your children. That's all kind of normal and good. But when you have, in addition to that, knowledge of the reality, where what the actual source of the ananda is, it gives you a tremendous freedom to be able to be with the people in your life that you're close to, the people that are meaningful to you, without requiring them to be a certain way. You're with them in the first place, especially the loved ones. You're the loved ones that are really close. You're with them in the first place because there's a certain compatibility and a shanti that you get from being together. There's something very beautiful about being together. So that shanti gives me a lot of peace and a lot of sense of well-being. And it's a relationship. That relationship is something that we work for to make it better, to make it more of a family, more of a home. And so that's all vyavahara. That's all living in this reality. And imagine not doing that. You have knowledge, and so then what? You're not, unless you're like a sannyasi sitting in a cave in meditation or something, you're still a person in the world and you're still relating with other people, you know. The thing is that if you have knowledge, you're relating to other people is much freer, because you don't have to have them be a certain way in order to love them. Because it's not, you love them, what you really love is the shantavritti, that shantavritti which they don't disturb. And they don't disturb it because you don't need them in order to have the shantavritti. And that gives you a tremendous amount of freedom to have a family, you know, to raise your children, to do all of that. You have tremendous freedom to do all of that and to grow with that, you know, because you don't need to sit in a cave unless that's your prarabdha. If you've got the prarabdha of a sannyasi, well, then that's your karma to live that type of a lifestyle. Because when we talk about it, for those of you who are doing the Gita and Mangalam with us, sannyasa is just a lifestyle, and it suits you, it's your karma. You take the orange, for instance, and you live a lifestyle that's simply devoted to contemplation, you know, satsang and teaching. That's what you do. And that's fine, that's beautiful. There's nothing wrong in that at all. But you have to have the prarabdha to do that. That is something that is natural to you. You have knowledge, you can settle into that. That's who you are. You're meant to be a sannyasi, you take sannyasi, you're happy with that, and that's your life, the life of a sannyasi. But that may be your prarabdha, it may not be your prarabdha. If you have knowledge, you have guna sannyasa. That means what the sannyasa really is for the sannyasi or for the householder or whatever, you know, is sarva karma sannyasa. That's sannyasa, really. And that doesn't have anything to do with the lifestyle. It has to do with knowledge. So sarva all karmas. I'm free of all karma. I'm free of all action, all kartritvam, all doership. There's really nothing at all in terms of this world that changes me, increases me, or decreases me. Myself has never been a karta. I've never been a doer, ever, at any time. So it's not like you gain knowledge and you become somebody who's a karta, not a doer. You recognize that fact about yourself. And then whatever prarabdha karma you have, you live that out. If that's all Ishwara. So you're just living in Ishwara Srishti, whatever the relationship is that you have with the world. You may be married and have children, you may be single, you may be a teacher, you could be so many things. You could be so many things. It just depends upon your karma. You know, and then that plays out. That life plays out as Ishwara, really, you know. And you find your way, what happens to you day after day after day. That's Bhagavan's life. Your life is Bhagavan's life. And so you just let it, you be with it. And you don't have to have it be a certain way. That's tremendous freedom. You know, you can have a life that has a very few people in it that are close to you, that know you, or you could have a huge footprint. You can be married, or you can be single, you can have children or not. But whoever they are, those are the people in your life, and they're given the tremendous freedom to be as they are, which is, I think, the greatest gift you can give somebody. You know, is that you're fine how you are. I don't need you to perform. So for my happiness, you don't need to perform for my sake. We can just be as we are. That's the beauty of it. You know. And so it's not, I'm saying this, it's not about denying sukhavrittis. It's just that your ananda isn't dependent on a sukhavritti. You know, sukhavritti means a thought modification of ananda, of some sort of joy or happiness. You don't require those because that's your own nature and your mind is awake to that fact. You know, and so it's not searching for all of these different types of experiences. Because you have what you want in terms of the result that all of these variety of experiences you want to have from that is that they makes you whole, makes you feel happy, makes you feel complete, makes you feel loved. That's all the nature of yourself. So projections are still there for some time because we have a lot of baggage, lifetimes of baggage in terms of the effects of ajnana, of ignorance. So it takes a while for this baggage to present itself to you, to who you are now, and then you have to process that, you know, which is kind of a nice journey. You should not be in a hurry. Just enjoy living your life, having knowledge and living your life, and let your mind unfold naturally, let your knowledge unfold naturally without feeling like you're in a race or something. That way you can really enjoy the whole process. I like to think of it, as Swamiji's used example too, is like if you have a little baby, you're not in a hurry for it to grow up. You know, you cherish, this I know from all my sisters and my nieces and nephews and other little babies in my life, even my brothers and sisters, because I was the oldest. We always... always you want to appreciate every moment. You don't want them to grow up and then leave all, you know. They grow up fast enough as it is. You want to be with them as they grow, you know, as they smile, as they say their first words, as they start to learn how to crawl, and then they learn how to walk, you know. And they get, you know, more vocabulary and start to become real personalities. You love every moment of it. That's the flower unfolding, you know. So that's a nice attitude to have about yourself. Once you gain knowledge, it's like a new life. It's like being a new person. Because now you know something that you absolutely did not know before. It's a totally different, whole different ballgame, totally different life. You can look at it like that. And then just enjoy the maturing process, which is, Bhagavan's never in a hurry. The Jiva Srishti is smooth. Jiva Srishti is always so fast because your imagination moves so quickly, like in a dream. A dream could be dreaming a 5-year span that takes place in 5 minutes. And I mean, that's how fast the mind is. Bhagavan is in real time. Your maturation process also is in real time, just like a flower unfolding. So it's something to cherish, that because it's kind of the end game, to cherish the final, that kind of final end game of really fulfilling yourself as the fulfillment really of the jiva is to remove that ajnana. So it's a very special time to come into this knowledge, so I wouldn't be in a hurry. And yes, the little ones inside are little baby ajnanis. They don't have self-knowledge, you know, most likely. You do. And you can be with them, and they'll be projecting all over the place, and their mom and their dad and all the things that happened to me, all the traumas. And you have to be with them on their own level. It's like you would be with a child. A child is probably not born as a little jnani running around, you know, like Hastamalika. So I think if you can slow down and enjoy the process of you'll be much happier, because your mind will be relaxed. Shantavritti. It's all about the Shantavrittis. For your, what I call kind of the secondary pala, the secondary result. The first, primary pala is recognizing that your Shanti is absolute and you don't require a Shantavritti. That you're free. The secondary gain is that your mind relaxes, and so the mind has much more Shanti naturally, because it's not asking the world to be different, it's not asking the desires to be fulfilled and all this kind of stuff. Because it doesn't matter though. You don't fall apart when you don't get what you want. Oh, what is Anupanda Chatushtiya? Chatushtiya means a group of four. And the Anupandas are those things that link you or connect you to a text or something that you're studying. Why would you study something? There's certain things you have to know to even make you want to study it or learn it. One is, what is the subject matter? You have to know the subject matter if you're going to study something. That's obvious, called the vishaya, right? The other is, who is qualified, the adhikari, to study that? Like, for instance, Swamiji always uses the example of math. Like, say, you really want to study calculus, but you don't know any arithmetic or algebra or geometry, and so you don't have the preparation to study calculus. You have to do these things first. You know, so just open a book on calculus and look at it. You're over before you start. You know, you have to get those fundamentals. So you're not an adhikari for calculus. So what you have to know, like, who is this subject matter meant for me to study it? Who am I, an adhikari? Am I somebody who should be studying this? So that's the adhikari. So the vishaya is the subject matter. And then what do I get out of studying it? That's the prayojana, also called the pala, the purpose. What do I get out of it? And then there's what's called the sambandha. The sambandha is, okay, if I study this, I'm studying this, and this is what I'm supposed to get out of it, what is the relationship between studying and the fruit, the result that I want? Like, for instance, if I study cooking, you know, I study a cookbook, and I know the cookbook very well, and I understand what needs to be done, and all of the methodology, I understand the whole thing, but that knowledge doesn't give me the meal. Right? I have to utilize that knowledge and actually do cooking. So the knowledge itself won't result in what I need to get out of it, which is to be able to cook well, cook a good meal, and then be able to eat that. So now I'm going to study, say I'm going to study the Vedanta. Now I've studied it, now I understand it, now what do I have to do? If I study it, I understand, I'm clear on it, then how do I get, what is the result? You know, do I have to then, like cooking, then do I have to go meditate so that I can know myself? Because this is the book, the text, the Upanishad is just descriptive. And then they give some, they give you a list of steps that you have to take to realize that. So what is the relationship between the purpose of your study, the result that you're hoping to get, and the study itself? So in Vedanta, the study itself is the result, because you're already here. What you want is already here. It already is who you are. And so the study removes the ignorance that is causing you not to know yourself and have all the superimposition. So this is called the Anubandha Chatushtaya, that will, the fourfold connecting links that connect you with the subject matter. You know, and you need to know that for any, if that's just for Vedanta, for anything, for any text that you study or any subject matter you get into, it's kind of just stating the obvious. But these are the things that you'd have to know. And so we do it in Vedanta to say, what is the subject matter? Who is the adhikari? Who is the qualified student? What is the connection? What is the result of the study? What is the connection between the study and the result? These things all have to be defined. Right, so that's what it is. Brahma and Maya is an unmanifest condition in the Karana Sharira. Brahman is never an unmanifest condition, but the Maya is an unmanifest condition. Brahman always is exactly the same. It is always completely manifest but non-dual. It manifests without there being an unmanifest condition. So Brahman and Maya, so unmanifest condition in the Karana Sharira. Why do we then say that the Karana Sharira is ignorance, which causes us to take another birth? Why do we give ignorance its own Sharira Upadi? Well, we have to say it a little differently than this. Karana means the cause. So the Upadi, and it's an Upadi, it's Maya, and it's the cause for the projection of for the projection of Hiranyagarbha for the Ishwara and the Virat, for the manifestation of the creation. It's in causal form in the Karana, which means causal, in the Karana Sharira. Okay, and now so from the standpoint of Ishwara, we don't call that avidya. It's just the causal condition is what we call Ishwara, Brahman plus Maya in its causal condition. But what is free of avidya from the standpoint, from ignorance, from the standpoint of Ishwara, from the standpoint of the jiva, that Maya acts as ignorance because of the limitations of the jiva upadi. Right? And so, let me see. If I get the question right. Okay, so that ajnanam, which is natural to Maya from the standpoint of the jiva, that is what we call ajnanam. And that is that ajnanam, self-ignorance, is responsible for taking birth after birth after birth, because you are totally identified with this physical body. You're performing karmas. The karmas cause you to take another birth, right? And then in that another birth, you perform karmas, and you're accruing punya and papa. So this, you're caught in this chakra. You know, you're doing karmas. The karmas give you another birth. have another birth, you do more karmas in order to be happy. All of it is just so that I can be happy, so that I can be whole, because I've superimposed my ananda, the wholeness of my being, you know, onto these objects of desire, and I do karmas so that I can get those objects, or I do the karmas so that I can get a better next birth, you know, so that I can have a happier life. And I get in that next birth, then I do karmas in that birth. So why? So that I can get a happier life, you know, or so that I can fulfill the desires I have in this life. So I am based upon whatever moment is here, whatever body I have, I am doing karmas to try to become happy, to try to become happier, to try to become get a better situation, a situation where I imagine myself being really beautiful and very happy in that situation. Whether it be a better birth, or whether it be, you know, what I am working on now. As a jnani, you could say, I'm just working on whatever comes here to work on, whatever the prarabdha is. As an ajnani, I'm working on, if I could just have this, or have this type of situation, this would be perfect for me, or perfect for us. We want this kind of situation, we can really relax and be happy and have all our needs, be able to be in a beautiful place. And all these imaginations, which are fine, there's really nothing wrong with them, except as long as you're fine if you don't get them. Those are called non-binding desires, you know. If you have non-binding desires, the desires themselves can just be, you have those desires because of your prarabdha, you know, or you've picked them up from the Joneses, you see, you know, from Mr. and Mrs. Smith over here. they have a place like that, and that would be so fantastic. They should have a place like that. Something like that, you know. Just goes on and on and on. You miss a lot of your life because of it. You know, because you're always working for something in the future, which is, there's nothing wrong with that either. But does it mean that you're not being here? And being with the people here, being with your life here and now? Because we tend to be always looking into the future and working to make that happen, which is okay. But often it's done at the expense of the life here. So that's the problem with all of that, you know. We don't like the life here because we're not happy. And then you project and you're not, why aren't you happy? Because you don't have a shantavritti. Because you don't know yourself, that's why. So you're trying to get the happiness out of something that doesn't have it. Out of empty, non-existent mitya. You know, it doesn't have anything to offer, really. Not really. The only thing that has something to offer is it's the truth of it, which is yourself. You know, how can the pot have something to offer when there's only clay there? So we're trying to get something from mitya when there's nothing there really, you know, other than my own being. And my own being is everything that you want, everything that you are and everything that you want. So we have to settle down, slow down. I've said it before, I think this, and for myself, and I've noticed it for myself, and so I teach it also, that patience, not being in a hurry for your life to pass, hurrying for your life to pass so you can have this thing in the future, and then you miss your life. Yeah, we just slow down and enjoy your life, the life that's here. When we compromise dharmic values differentiating me, Atma, who is not affected by the experience, from me, the doer, seems to me a way to potentially avoid my responsibility rather than a way of looking objectively at the situation and see what I, the doer, can do better next time. Can you unfold how to make a wise use of viveka and how not to abuse it? Well, this is the thing. Even with your self-knowledge and nishta in the self-knowledge. If you stick your hand in fire, it's going to burn. It doesn't matter if you're Swamiji, a great Mahatma, abiding in samadhi. You stick your hand in fire, it will burn. If you do a dharma, yourself will, as full as it is and as beautiful and complete as it is, will be exactly the same, but it will be illumining a painful mind. That's why. You know, and so the universe is a great teacher. There's nobody escapes the laws. Whether you're jnani, as long as you have a body and mind and sense organs and you're here on this loka, your body, mind, sense organs is subject to the laws of this loka. The Atma has no laws. From your own standpoint, there's no universe even. There's nothing. There's still only you. And though that might sound strange, what you have to do is realize the truth of it, like in meditation, when you're just, you know, relaxing your body so that it kind of disappears. It's not calling you in any way. You relax your mind. And you just are with yourself. And then let the buddhi ask, does the self, the me, know anything? Is it having any experience at all other than just the conscious being that I am? The self-evident conscious being that I am. Is there any knowership taking place from my own standpoint? Is there even a universe? The answer is no, not at all. And yet, with the Maya Upadhi being there, and say for Ishwara, the sattva pervading, and for the jivas, having the sattva, you know, then there is knownness, the mistaken sense of knowership, just because you use that as language, but you never experience knowership, you only experience knownness. But then, you attribute the knownness to your eyes. Your eyes become the knower of the knownness. But there is no experience other than known. But we, in our language, we add this word, knower. And so it's a beautiful, in the meditations we're doing for now in this little period for us, we're more centered just on realizing and differentiating myself and being with myself. And this is a beautiful question to ask. Am I knowing anything? Or am I just me, consciousness? And you say, you'll realize, no, from my standpoint, there is no object of knowledge. But an object of knowledge, there's never an object of knowledge. It's that the Maya, which totally has me for its being, has that knownness, that self, it borrows the self-evident nature of me. And so the Maya, all of the Maya is known. This is known, this is known, this is known, this is known. If you take that whole thing away, then there's just is known, self-evident consciousness. You know, and so self-evident consciousness is just self-evident consciousness. It's not knowing anything. It's only self-evident. It knows itself, not as a subject object, but just because I am consciousness. And so I am known. But I'm not, there's nothing outside of me. And that's a beautiful experience to have, to recognize that fact, because it's not that this goes away as long as you have a new body, as long as the Maya is there, you'll have all of this, subject, object, and all of these things, and all of the things that we go through in this plane. But at the same time, my being, the me, is here also, but I'm not knowing anything. I'm pure. As for me, there's no guilt, there's no shame, there's nothing. There's nothing except myself, my being. And this whole creation is a manifestation of that. But we need to recognize that wholeness of myself and the untainted nature of it. It is totally untainted. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't say, yeah, but mine is tainted. You know, or mine has some negative things. No, it doesn't. Not at all. Your mind has problems and hurts and pains, and if there's any adharma done, then it has to suffer that and make up for it, do some prayaschitta. Prayaschitta karma, that means say you're sorry or do something to neutralize, you know, to make up for it in order to bring back that shanti. or apologize, feel sad, do something to make up for it. If you hurt somebody, you know, or there's a misunderstanding, sometimes that's hard to do, but you have to reach out somehow to neutralize it. You have to do what you can. Otherwise it just stays there as a hurt. Yeah. We all have some of those we weren't able really to take care of. I do too. I'm still not able to take care of them. What can you do? You just do your best. But from your standpoint, you're fine. But the mind will have its issues. Can you redefine and explain the connection between Shruti, Yukti, and Anubhava? Yeah. To really have knowledge of something, whatever it is, there's three things that are required in order to have knowledge, not just have it be imagination. First thing that's required is a means of knowledge, a pramana, a valid means of knowledge. So one thing we would mean by valid is, say, for instance, if I'm looking at something with my eyes, this is kind of a stock example from the Upanishads and things. My eyes are a means of knowledge for seeing color, for seeing form. But if my eyes are jaundiced, everything looks yellow. Or if my eyes have a cataract. These are ancient examples, so it's interesting. So if your eyes are jaundiced, you look around and everything's yellow, and then you say, why is everything yellow? What's happened? You know? Somebody asks, so your eyes are jaundiced. You know, you have a problem with your eyes. Nothing's yellow. You know? So that means that the eyes are not functioning well as a pramana. They have a problem. If you have cataracts and you look up, this is their example, you look up and you see the moon, but there's not one there, there's two. Mm-hmm. So then you say, my gosh. How did we get the second moon? So the answer is, if there's only one moon, there's something wrong with your eyes. So that's what we say, a valid means of knowledge, a means of knowledge that is functioning properly and is functioning in the right circumstance. Like say just one more example, because it's a funny one. Say if you've, you know, lost your glasses, and you thought you left them, not my glasses here, you thought you left them here on the table, right? And then you go and look for your glasses. Let's say we use my glasses. Okay. Yeah, I left my glasses on the table. But I'm looking all over for them and I can't find them. And then I have to tell the person, you have to turn on the light. And then you can see whether or not your glasses are on the table. If it's dark out, if it's black out, then you're not able to see whether they're on the table or not. These are silly examples, but they're actually the ones that we use. The whole idea is that the pramana, the means of knowledge, has to be functioning properly. So that's the pramana. Then the other thing, second thing, is you need anubhava, you need the experience. You know, there has to be something there for you to know. An object of the pramana is a means of knowledge. So then you have to have something to have knowledge of. So whatever the experience is that you're getting knowledge of, that has to be there. So that's anubhava. And then it has to... So now you have a means of knowledge and you have the object of knowledge. So there's a relationship there between the means of knowledge and the anubhava, the object of knowledge. But then also, it has to withstand your inquiry. Like an example we use for that is, say, I have my eyes and they're working fine and I'm able to see this beautiful rose in a beautiful vase, and I can say, that's a rose. I can see the rose. But somebody else can say, yeah, but that might not be a real rose. I think that's, you know, a plastic rose. That's an artificial rose, I think. And I'll look at it and say, it doesn't look like an artificial rose. And then the other person would say, well, they're so hard to tell apart now that you really can't tell with your eyes whether it's a real rose or an artificial rose. And so now the inquiry has begun. That's the yukti, you know. It has to withstand inquiry. It has to withstand logical analysis, because you could be mistaken. And so the whatever your principle you're operating on, you know, needs to withstand logic. That's the idea. So you need, because your mind has to be convinced. Like, as soon as the person say, "I was looking at this rose," I thought, "Yeah, it's a beautiful rose." As soon as they say, you know, "That could be an artificial rose," then my mind goes, more inquiry necessary. Because your mind has to be satisfied. Even though everything seems to be working, the anubhava is there, the object is there, the pramanas are working fine, my eyes are fine, still it has to withstand inquiry. That's why in the Vedanta, in, there's the teaching methodology, there's the Upanishads that are being taught, but the inquiry, so the vision has to be taking place. The vision, as the teaching is the pramana. The Upanishad is the pramana. That pramana has to be wielded. It has to be handled. You are there. The self is there. The universe is there. This is the anubhava is definitely all there. So the pramana has to be wielded. So there's the pramana. The anubhava is there, you know. But then the questions are like, is the Upanishad for the Shravana? The questions would be, is this really what the Upanishad is saying? Is this really the vision of the Upanishads? Is this what they're saying? Because you can get confused. Because it's words, they're just the unfolding, the pramana is taking place through words that are directing your vision, really, toward your own presence, removing that ajnanam. So the mind can have all kinds of questions about that. Is this really what the Upanishads are saying? Did I understand this right? Am I seeing this correctly? I used to ask, not just me, but we would all ask Swamiji questions like, is this right, Swamiji? Do I really know? Am I correct, Swamiji? Do I really know? Is this what it is? Yeah. So these kind of questions. And then also you could say, another type of questions. This is all inquiry. I see what the Upanishads say, but the Buddhists say this, Swamiji, and that seems to make sense to me, too. You know, what about what the yogis say? So you can go through all of the different darshanas, or you can have your own ideas. This is how I think it is. Why we bother to go through all of the different darshanas is because really they're questions that anybody could have. You know, those questions are very thorough. And so in the Brahma Sutras and even in the commentaries, so many questions are brought up and then resolved because the teacher thinks of all of those questions for you. You have your own questions, but then so many questions are covered to cover questions you didn't even know you had until they're brought up. Then you think, oh yeah, what is that? You know? So that clarity has to take place. So that's the yukti. That's what we call yukti, that inquiry. It has to be logical. You need a pramana, and for us, the pramana is the shruti of the Upanishads. The shruti really is the Vedas, and for Advaita Vedanta, for the Vedanta, it's at the end. It's located in the Upanishads, which are placed at the end of the Vedas. Right, so the shruti for the Vedanta is the Upanishads. So shruti, yukti, anubhava. So you need all of these things to be fall into place. In order to have jnana nishta, clarity without doubts. Because to have clarity and to be doubt free, that means that you've had to bring up all of your doubts. Also, the teacher brings up a lot of them, but you may have your own. Those have to come up. If they don't, then they'll always be kind of nagging there. You may not bring them up because you're afraid. You don't want to rock the boat.
Radha? Sorry, I think I didn't understand the difference between manana and yukti.
Oh, well, yukti is all the way through. Like, say, Shravana, the Upanishads are being wielded and taught. Okay? So the anubhava, the experience that's being pointed to, is there. Right? The pramana is there, the means of knowledge. But then yukti is the inquiry, the logic. It has to hold true logically in your mind. It has to make sense in your mind. So yukti is logic. You have to see why it's that way and not another way. And that requires thinking and logic. See what I mean? So that's what yukti is. It's the application of logic.
And manana?
Manana, okay. So we have, if we look at what is what we call the upaya nishta, how do you gain self-knowledge? Well, you gain it through shravana, manana, nididhyasana. Shravana is exposure to the Upanishads, through the teaching of the Upanishads by the teacher, because the acharya and the upadesha means the teaching, and the acharya, you have to have shraddha in both so that you can be exposed to the teaching. So when the teaching is taking place, there's going to be yukti, because your mind has to understand it. It has to make sense. And your mind will make sure that it makes sense, because otherwise it won't feel it understands and it will ask questions. In manana, it's a different type. And so in shravana, the type of questions are, what is the Upanishad really saying? Is this what it's saying? Swamiji, is this what, does it mean this or saying this? So it's an inquiry into the vision of the Upanishads. Manana is the different type of inquiry. This all comes up in the teaching. All shravana, manana, nididhyasana are all part of the teaching. But the manana is like, why couldn't it be like this? This is, I understand what the Upanishads say, but I don't understand why it couldn't be like this. And so you need clarity there. That requires inquiry. That requires logic, logical understanding that, no, it can't be like that because, and then you have to list out the reasons and prove that it actually cannot be like that. So the yukti is being used to negate other points of view. Like what if, look, for an example of another point of view would be, I don't see why there can't be many atmas. And that the prithivi, this is the Sankhya. I don't understand why it can't be like what the Sankhya says. There are many atmas, not one atma. And that prithivi, prakriti. I'm tired, okay. But the prakriti is real, that it has its own existence. Why can't it be like that? There's prakriti is a reality itself, and the infinite number of purushas are their own reality. You know, and they come together in some way. You know, and moksha is the kind of the coming into quiescence totally of the prakriti, so that the purusha, your purusha, is free to own and just experience itself as the purusha. So this is a totally another philosophy, as though. And so you can wonder, well, why couldn't it be like that? What's wrong with that? You know, and so then there'll be a whole unfoldment about why that can't be so, based upon the anubhava, what we actually experience, that can be negated. Do you see? And then nididhyasana is the third one, which has to do with this, what we call the negating the dehatma buddhi, that conviction that the self is the body. And that requires contemplation. To just sit with the fact of it till your mind recognizes. Without any doubt, you just be with yourself. Like we're doing some nididhyasana now. So you get to slow down time in a way and just sit with that viveka over and over in many different ways. So you see, oh, yeah, there's a subject-object relationship there. And then you focus on the nature of the self, the nature of that which is objectified. So, is that good enough?
So yukti literally is the logic, and manana is kind of critical thinking.
Mm-hmm. No, but both in shravana and manana there's critical thinking. But in shravana, the critical thinking has to do with what are the Upanishads actually saying? Did I understand right? In Manana, it's why couldn't it be like this? Another philosophy or your own doubt. Why couldn't it be like this? Why does it have to be like what the vision of the Upanishads? So that's Manana. It's comparing it and questioning whether it could also be like this or if this is more reasonable than this. So it's not about anymore about what the Upanishads are saying. It's that this other philosophy or your own mind is thinking that it could as well be like this. So those are doubts. One are doubts about what the Upanishads are saying. Others are doubts, what the Manana has doubts about what else it could be. One more, because we're not going to finish these tonight. We'll just do one more and have a budget and go to bed. I think you said today that there's a connection between Prajna and Sarvajna Ishvara. Please explain again. Well, I didn't say it exactly like that, but let me just see if I can answer it. Prajna and Ishvara are both the Karana Sharira, the causal body. Means when Maya is in its what we call Sama Avastha. What that means, Avastha means a state of Samatvam. Samatvam means when everything is in equilibrium. You've got the Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, which is Maya, and they're all silent. Still active only from, as they talk about Prakriti, they're only active within themselves, Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. They're not crossing into each other or working off of each other in any way, so they're just in, that's their causal condition. And so when Maya is in that causal condition, means that not manifest as Hiranyagarbha or as Virat, we call that from the standpoint in the causal condition, from the standpoint of Ishvara, right? When the standpoint of the total causal condition, that's what we call Ishvara. Then from the jivas within the causal condition of Maya, we call as Prajna. Prajna is that which when the creation comes into manifestation, like it comes into Hiranyagarbha and then into Virat, or Ishvara. When it comes into Hiranyagarbha, there's Hiranyagarbha and then all the Tejasas, all of the jivas. So when it goes into causal condition, there's the whole Hiranyagarbha in causal condition, as well as all of the prajnas, as well as all the jivas. And so the condition of the jivas is one of Brahman, the self, with that causal condition, which for the jiva is ajnanam, right? Because limited, the jiva is limited. So when it comes out, it's not like when Ishvara comes into manifestation, it's sarvajnaha, all knowledge, because there's no jnanam. Because it's the infinite, it's the manifestation just of sattva, rajas, and tamas. With sattva, rajas, and tamas, you know, pervading equally the whole creation. And so that means there's sattva in the whole creation, so the whole creation is known like an infinite mind. But for the jivas within the creation, the jivas have limited body, mind, sense organs, and when the whole thing goes into causal condition, the jivas also are in causal condition with their limited body, mind, sense organs resolved into a jnanam, kind of like deep sleep. Whereas for Ishvara, it's like nirvikalpa samadhi. For the jiva, it's like deep sleep. And so that prajna means that prajna is now in its causal condition, and it as though doesn't know anything, but actually it's the self which, when it comes out of causal condition, will be the knower. Knower because of the sukshma sharira, because of the sattva mind. It'll be the knower in the Hiranyagarbha as the jiva, and it'll be the knower as Vishwa, in Virat, in the physical world. So that's why it's called prajna. You know, it is the closest thing to Brahman, you know. In what's there, just myself, and then the jivatvam in totally causal condition. When it comes out, then that jiva expresses itself as a knower, as a conscious being. But in prajna, There is no other expression except for me. And the jiva is in just unmanifest condition. That's why we call it prajna. And as it becomes the subtle body is tajasa, then knowership is there in the dream state. And then in Hiranyagarbha, I mean in Virat, then it's Vishwa, it's this here. It's when the Sukshma Sharira is joined in the physical body, then here we are, we're Vishwa. I don't know if that helped or not, but that's what it is for me tonight, as my eyes are crossing. Let's call it a night.
Shubhamastu nityam Loka samasta sukhino bhavantu Kale varshatu parjanyaha Prithivi sasya shalini Desho yamsho parahitaha Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarvesham swastir bhavatu Sarvesham Shantir Bhavatu Sarvesham Purnam Bhavatu Sarvesham Mangalam Bhavatu Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kaschit Dukha Bhavet Asatoma Satgamaya Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya Mrityorma Amritangamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.